Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. One of the more than 200 Nigerian schoolgirls abducted by the Sunni insurgency Boko Haram more than 2 years ago has been rescued. Amina Ali, discovered Tuesday in the Sambisa forest of northeast Borno State by civilian vigilantes and soldiers on patrol. Olatunji Olarawanju is a member of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign.
On the list of 219 girls, she's number 127. She's from a village in Chibok called Mbalala. They've met with her parents. They've been able to debrief her, get some information, and she has been handed over to the Nigerian military for further debriefing. But we were also told that she was found with a child that is just about 1 year old or under 1 year of age.
The abduction of nearly 300 girls from their school in the village of Chibok, April 14, 2014, sparked international outrage. Amina Ali is said to be in the capital of the Borno State, Maiduguri, and will reportedly meet in Abuja Thursday with President Muhammadu Buhari, who's made defeating Boko Haram a top priority. In Washington, Florida, Congresswoman Federica Wilson celebrated the news.
This is an extremely critical development and the best possible confirmation of why it has been so important for us to fight for the safe return of these girls.
She said it's time for the U.S. and other nations to join Nigeria in hunting for the remaining abducted girls. Forces loyal to the new Libyan unity government lost more than 30 soldiers in continued clashes with fighters of Islamic State in an effort to push the militant group back to its stronghold in Sirte. 7 of the fatalities occurred as a result of a car bomb explosion. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry in Cairo Wednesday met Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi on a host of issues, including reviving the moribund Israeli-Palestinian peace process. Mr. Sisi has said he would make every effort toward a solution. U.S. spokesman John Kirby said the American diplomat expressed his appreciation for Mr. Sisi's strong support for advancing Arab-Israeli peace, a process that broke down in 2014 without agreement.
We remain committed to trying to get to a two-state solution, which means you have to get to the kind of conditions that are conducive to having discussions that would lead to that. And that has been a difficult discussion to be had in recent weeks and months because of the violence.
Kerry also was expected to discuss Libya, Syria, and the ongoing security crackdown on dissent in Egypt. In Syria, the British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said government airstrikes Wednesday killed at least 13 members of one family in the central province of Homs. Bomb blasts occurred in a residential neighborhood of the rebel-controlled Rostan. It was seized by rebel groups in 2012, but is surrounded by government-backed forces. Meanwhile, the International Committee of the Red Cross said Wednesday an aid convoy finally entered the besieged rebel-held suburb of the capital, Damascus, with residents of Harastra in eastern Ghouta receiving the first outside assistance in 4 years. A U.S. airstrike killed two high-value individuals in an attack on an Islamic State building in Iraq. Baghdad-based military spokesman Colonel Steve Warren said Wednesday the May 13 strike killed Abu Hamza and Abu Safiya, as well as a third militant.
Abu Hamza was a mid-level military commander who was responsible for the area between Nasiriyah and Juba. Hamza was a former AQI member who we know planned and conducted attacks against Americans during Operation Iraqi Freedom.
He said Abu Hamza was also responsible for coordinating Islamic State fighters, reinforcements, and finances. Abu Safiya is blamed for staging chemical weapons attacks in Iraq's Euphrates River Valley. Two strong aftershocks shook the coast of Ecuador Wednesday in the same place where last month's 7.8 magnitude quake killed more than 650. President Rafael Correa says Wednesday's quakes killed one, injured more than 80. He says people are still in shelters from the major quake of April 16 and are suffering through a number of aftershocks. He said there remains much panic and fear. He says officials have appealed for calm. A 6.8 magnitude quake struck early in the morning near a fishing village, followed by a 6.7 jolt in the afternoon. Rescue workers in Sri Lanka Wednesday searched for victims of landslides caused by torrential rains. At least three villages affected, leaving nearly 40 dead. Dozens are reported missing, feared buried alive. Nearly 200 have been rescued. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There's high morale in Nigeria's military following the rescue of one of the Chibok girls.
I am pleased to inform you that today is a great day in the history of the fight against terrorism and insurgency in this country.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman is the spokesman for the Nigerian military. We'll hear more on how the girl was liberated. Kenyan police are under fire for brutality, and opposition groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo are gearing up for a nationwide rally next week in defense of the Constitution.
We don't want him to stay in power even 1 hour more after December the 20th. That's why we are asking our population to get off the street the next Thursday, the 26th of May, to ask respect of the Constitution.
Abba Puela is a member of parliament and coordinator of the Opposition Dynamics Coalition in the DRC. The airing of all foreign music is banned in Nyambio FM in South Sudan's Budu Estate. And the ILO says progress towards global poverty reduction is losing ground. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our Listener of the Day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian military officials are debriefing the first schoolgirl to be rescued since Boko Haram militants carried out an infamous mass kidnapping in northeast Nigeria more than 2 years ago. Amina Ali was among nearly 300 girls abducted when members of the Islamist militant group stormed the government secondary school in the town of Chibok in April 2014. Officials say she was with a suspected militant, but others involved in the rescue say the man is her husband. Christine reports from Lagos.
The circumstances of the girl's rescue are unclear. Army spokesman Sani Usman said in a text message that the girl was found in the village of Bale, near the northeast Nigerian town of Damboa. A vigilante leader in Chibok, Aboku Gaji, told VOA vigilantes found her while setting up an ambush near a Boko Haram camp.
As we lie ambush, they come just come on us.
Gaji identified the girl as Amina Ali. Gaji said the rescued girl had a baby with her. She was also with her husband, a fellow Boko Haram captive she had married while in captivity. Gaji said the girl was identified by her mother, then handed over to the military. Boko Haram abducted the 219 schoolgirls in April 2014 from their dormitory at the government secondary school in Chibok. Protesters took to the streets in Nigeria and around the world, imploring the government to bring back our girls. Outside of videos released by the Islamist insurgents, none of the girls had been seen again, until today. The chairman of the Chibok Elders Forum, Pogo Baitris, said he was elated by the rescue.
At least they are alive, they are being found. And whatever situation or condition, that doesn't matter. The important thing is they're alive and they're being found.
Gaji said the rescued girl confirmed what has long been suspected, that Boko Haram was holding the abductees in their stronghold in the Sambisa forest.
She told us that the other girls were still there in the Sambisa.
Gaji said the girl told him six of her abducted classmates had died in captivity. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
A Nigerian military spokesman says morale is high among Nigerian soldiers on the front lines of the fight against the Islamist militant group Boko Haram in the Sambisa forest. This follows the rescue of one of the abducted Chibok girls. The army recently launched a military offensive aimed at putting pressure on Boko Haram. Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman tells reporter Peter Clotty that the Nigerian military is happy with the level of the fight against Boko Haram in the Sambisa forest and other parts of the country.
I am pleased to inform you that today is a great day in the history of the fight against terrorism and insurgency in this country because indeed one of the abducted Chibok school girls that were abducted on the 14th April 2014, about 2 years, months now, has been found. And she is Miss Amina Ali, who confirmed that actually she is among the abducted Chibok school girls.
Kenneth, we also heard reports that intelligence the military has been getting from this girl is that six of the girls have been killed by the terrorist group.
Well, I will not confirm nor deny that yet because right now she's been kind of briefed and a lot of information is being revealed as to the whereabouts of other girls and what happened to them and other things like that. And in line with keeping faith with the public By the time we complete our preliminary investigation, certainly we'll let you know where they are and what happened to some of them. But quite a number of things are coming out from her, and in fact, the suspected Boko Haram terrorist that was found along with her.
Is the military effort in the Sambisa forest yielding result as a result of one of the girls being rescued?
I must inform you that actually, you know, it is in line with our renewed vigor under the auspices of Operation Crackdown, which was aimed at flushing out Boko Haram terrorists and rescuing all other persons they held hostage or captive in Sambisa forest, including the abducted Chibok schoolgirls. And, of course, that singular strategy and effort is yielding the desired dividends. If you recall, over time, we were able to rescue over 12,000 other persons. And now we are inching towards the recovery and the rescue of the abducted schoolgirls also with what happened today.
Some reports in Nigeria are saying that it wasn't the Nigerian army or the military, for that matter, that rescued the girl, and it was just a vigilante group that rescued this girl. What can you tell me about it? Is the report false?
You see, all these things, they are immaterial, even though they might be important. But the most important is the fact that these girls that were abducted over 2 years ago, that the whole world was waiting on, we have started rescuing them. So who takes credit for what is immaterial? But I can tell you, our schools have been inching. I mean, they have been in some distant forests, and they are just one fighting. But the vigilante group also play a very important role because they are familiar with the ground and the environment. So they help in terms of intelligence and other information.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman is spokesman for the Nigerian military. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Opposition groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo say they are mobilizing for a massive nationwide rally next week to force President Joseph Kabila to respect the constitution and step down at the end of his second term. Mr. Kabila, elected since 2001, is required by the Constitution to step down this year. The opposition has accused the president of purposely blocking elections so that he may stay in power. As if to confirm this allegation, the country's Constitutional Court ruled last week that Mr. Kabila should remain in office if the country fails to hold presidential elections in November this year. Albert Puela is a member of parliament and coordinator of the Opposition Dynamics Coalition. He says the court's ruling is a violation of the constitution.
According to us as the opposition team, we disagree about the judgment of constitutional court. We really disagree because his judgment violated the constitution. In constitution, the president has only one term, which can be renewed only once. But the Constitutional Court allowed Mr. Kabila to stay in power if the elections are organized. So we have only to follow the Constitution. We don't want him to stay in power even 1 hour more after December the 20th, because we have to follow the Constitution. That's why we are asking our population to get off the streets the next Thursday, the 26th of May, to ask the respect of the Constitution.
Information Minister Mr. Lambert Mende says that the Constitutional Court ruling is in line with the DRC Constitution.
No, he's mistaken. You know, Mr. Kabila, since the beginning, is looking for how to be maintained in power. That's why he asked for a dialogue. And we knew that this dialogue is just a waste of time. And he wanted people to organize first. Many things he wants to be organized as what you call in French, a recensement, to know the number of populations. He wants to change even all the constitutions. So we know that all of this is a waste of time. And for the time being, the constitution is very clear. And we didn't need an interpretation from the Supreme Court. And what they did is only to allow Mr. Kabila to stay in power.
Do you fear that the Electoral Commission might go to the Constitutional Court to ask it to delay the election? Are you fearful of that?
We are as a prisoner, because people leading the Electoral Commission has been appointed by Mr. Kabila, and they are doing only what Mr. Kabila wants. Mr. Malumalu and he's the vice president. They announced a global calendar, a global schedule of election. Mr. Kabila was upset and they were violent. They dismissed all of them and he changed another team. So for the time being, I'm not sure that the new team can organize election. They are following only what Mr. Kabila is saying because they want to, they had to organize election since the beginning because, you know, the Article 73 is saying that the commissional election has to call the electoral court just 90 days before the end of the term of the president. But that's what we are really waiting for. Because if they don't organize election in the constitutional term, Mr. Kabila will be illegal. And that's why we are calling our people to stand up and fight against Mr. Kabila, because we don't want him to stay in power even 1 hour more.
Arba Puela is a member of parliament and coordinator of the Opposition Dynamics Coalition. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 19th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on our affiliate, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Kenyan police are coming under fire for their brutal response to an opposition protest on Monday. As Lenny Ruvaga reports for VOA from Nairobi, photos and video of police beating protesters have sparked outrage.
3 Mondays in a row, Kenya's main opposition coalition has demonstrated at the Electoral Commission in Nairobi, calling for it to be disbanded before next year's polls. Each time, riot police dispersed protesters with tear gas and water cannons. But this week, police kicked and clubbed protesters as they ran, according to photos and videos posted online. Those include images of an officer stomping on an unconscious man's head. The man survived, but Kenyans have taken to Twitter to react with the hashtag #StopPoliceBrutality. Nairobi Governor Evans Kidero called for swift action.
We've said that the Police Oversight Authority must investigate this, and the people who meted out violence against innocent people who were engaging in peaceful protest must be prosecuted.
This is not the first time the police have been accused of abuses. The Independent Medical Legal Unit, IMLU, released a study late last year that found police were responsible for nearly 300 gun-related killings since the start of 2014. Executive Director of the Kenya Human Rights Commission, KHRC, George Kegoro, says excessive use of force cannot be tolerated.
We would like to get assurances from the police department that as the country heads towards elections and the mobilization of large crowds happen, this is not going to be the kind of response that we see from the police department. So we must celebrate and preserve the rights of citizens to protest.
The Independent Policing Oversight Authority, IPOA, is looking into Monday's violence, according to board member Tom Kagwe.
Already investigations have been launched, and we will see which officers was culpable. If we can't find the particular individual who is culpable, we will file a case with the highest responsibility in line of command.
The Inspector General of Police has also ordered an investigation, though activists say similar orders in recent years have yielded little action or reform. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Listeners of the government-owned Yambio FM radio station in the newly created Budue state of South Sudan are criticizing this week's government decision to ban all foreign music from airing on the station. The state ministerial order followed complaints from local musicians that their songs are not being played on the local station. As Gift Friday reports for VOA from Juba, the station's program presenters and local artists say the ban on foreign music is unnecessary.
As from today, the domination of Yambio FM radio station by foreign songs will come to an end. Today is the end of the domination of foreign music in Yambio FM.
That's Information Minister Joseph Natale Sabuni issuing the order at Yambia Freedom Square during the celebration of the 33rd SPLA anniversary. The announcement comes on the heels of accusations by Chris Malaise, head of the Budwe State Local Artists Association, that the state radio station fails to play any songs from local musicians or conduct interviews with the local artists about their material.
We are seeing that the radio stations are dominated by foreign music, so I was trying to kind of an advice if they can reduce the speed of playing the foreign music and then rather play our own music of Southern release. More than that, we all need development in the music industry, and that is why we are behind the artists of South Sudan.
Malaise says he does not understand why Ugandan music dominates local music on the local airwaves. Yambia FM arts and entertainment presenter Victor Mbengo insists the station airs plenty of music by local artists.
But as someone who works with artists and entertainment programs, I feel like that accusation is not right, because in our radio station, we have every Saturday and Sunday is dedicated for the artist and entertainment program. That is from 12 to 2 p.m. We even asked the president, who accused us, that can he produce for us the list of the artists in the state when we were still called Western Equatoria. He even failed 2 to 3 times.
Mbengo says, in addition to the regular programs he has mentioned on which local music is played, the station dedicates 4 hours to local music each and every Saturday and Sunday. He says the ministerial order will negatively impact the state radio station.
Banning Ugandan music, that tells me as a presenter that when I sit in the radio, that means I'm only talking to a particular group, or I'm only playing song of a particular group, but not covering all people who are living in the state.
Malaise says state officials never meant to institute an all-out ban playing foreign songs on the state-run radio station. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
A new report from the International Labour Organization finds that years of progress made in reducing poverty worldwide are being threatened by deteriorating economic conditions and lack of quality jobs. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the report titled World Employment and Social Outlook 2016, Transforming Jobs to End Poverty.
Figures show significant progress has been made in reducing global poverty. The International Labour Organization estimates the number of people in 107 emerging and developing countries living in extreme poverty with incomes of less than $2 a day has fallen by nearly one half in 1990 to just under 15% in 2012. That progress, however, has been uneven and fragile. While significant improvements have been made in China and much of Latin America, ILO Director General Guy Ryder says poverty remains stubbornly high in Africa and parts of Asia.
For example, more than 40% of the African population continues to live in extreme poverty, and some 64% in extreme or moderate poverty. And another element which I think we need to pay attention to is the fact that in the developed world, there has been an increase, an absolute increase in poverty, notably in this continent of Europe.
Ryder adds the recent deterioration of economic prospects in Asia and Latin America foretells a bleaker future for poverty reduction in those regions. He says economic growth in itself does not guarantee poverty alleviation. He warns income inequality in these and other countries worldwide is beginning to rise after decades of decline, further threatening the ability of people to get themselves out of the poverty trap.
In addition, the ability of growth to reduce poverty is compromised by the inequitable income distribution, showing that the rich are taking a disproportionately high share of the benefits of growth, and in a way could be considered partly responsible for this perpetuation of poverty.
The ILO says the United Nations Sustainable Development Goal of ending poverty in all its forms everywhere is at risk. The agency's study calculates a total of $10 trillion over the next 15 years is needed to eradicate extreme and moderate poverty globally by 2030. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Marco Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with football. Ghanaian hosts Medeama beat South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns 2-0 in the return leg of the Orange African Confederations Cup tie in Sekondi, some 30 kilometers east of the capital, Accra, on Wednesday. Medeama progressed on the away goal rule after the teams tied 3-3 on aggregate. Gabonese hosts CF Munana pipped Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel 1-0 in Libreville. However, Etoile du Sahel advanced on a 2-1 aggregate. Similarly, Angola's Sagrada Esperanca edged visiting Young Africans of Tanzania 1-0 in Lukapa, some 800 kilometers east of the capital, Luanda. However, Young Africans prevail on a 2-1 aggregate. Morocco's Kaukab Marrakech outwitted Sudan's El Merreikh 2-0 in Marrakech to progress on a 2-1 aggregate. Egyptian hosts Misri Makassa and Libya's El Ahli Tripoli drew 1-1 in Fayoum, some 65 kilometers southwest of the capital, Cairo. El Ahli progressed on their away goal rule, while Morocco's FUS Rabat outclassed Mali's Stade Malien 4-0 to go ahead on a 4-0 aggregate. Turning to athletics, Olympic champion Ezekiel Kemboi clocked 8 minutes and 14.19 seconds to lead Abraham Kibiwot in a 1-2 Kenyan triumph in men's 3,000-meter steeplechase at the IAAF World Challenge meet in Beijing, China on Wednesday. Ivory Coast's Muriel Lahore carried the day in women's 100 meters in 11.06 seconds, while Kenyan Kipyego Bett prevailed in men's 800 meters in 1 minute and 45.80 seconds. Kenyan Helen Obiri won the women's 1,500 meters in 4 minutes and 2.11 seconds, with Kenyan newcomer Nelly Jepkoskei placed third. In Rwanda, over 4,000 athletes from more than 30 countries will converge in the capital for the Kigali International Peace Marathon on Sunday, the Rwanda Athletics Federation Vice Chairman Thomas Kajuga told the media in Kigali on Wednesday. Kajuga explained that the annual event is designed to use sports in the healing and reconciliation process after the 1994 genocide tragedy. He says besides athletes from Burundi, Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda, they have registered entries from competitors coming from various European countries and the United States of America. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigerian military officials are debriefing the first schoolgirl to be rescued since Boko Haram militants carried out an infamous mass kidnapping in northeast Nigeria more than 2 years ago. Officials told VOA Amina Ali was among nearly 300 girls abducted when members of the Islamist military group stormed the government secondary school in the town of Chibok in April 2014. Many escaped immediately after the kidnapping, but over 200 remain missing. And that's it for this Thursday, May 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Zubair Etayeb. I'm James Butte saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Savor the flavor of African music. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.